kinds of things he did with us. So.
Well, the first thing that I'd like to ask you, Dr. Randolph, is how long you've lived in Charlotte.
I came to Charlotte in 1944, and I have lived here ever since. I came here to teach.
I see. And where, I'd like to come back to your teaching, but where did you move here from?
I grew up in Raleigh.
And since I've brought you back a little bit, I'd like to ask you a little bit about growing up in Raleigh. Were you born in Raleigh?
No, I was not born in Raleigh. I was born in Farmville, North Carolina. That's down in Pitt County. My mother was a teacher, but my father was a plastering contractor, and he traveled where the construction jobs were. So we moved from place to place until we finally settled in Raleigh. I was born in Farmville, and my oldest brother was born in Farmville, and we moved from there to Norfolk, Virginia. And from Norfolk, Virginia, we moved to Southern Pines, North Carolina. And then my mother got tired of moving, and so she told my father that we were going to decide on a place that was going to be home, and he could travel, and we would stay there and be a family, and welcome him when he could come home. So we settled in Raleigh, and that's where all of us grew up, the six of us. My parents had three girls and three boys, and we grew up in Raleigh. All of us went to school there.
And did your father continue to travel around after you moved to Raleigh?
Yes, he continued to travel around where the plastering and contracting jobs were. And he did that really when he got sick and died, he was on a contracting job.
And your mother continued to work as a teacher when she had six children?
Yes, she certainly did. She was a very, very strict, a loving but very, very strict parent. And she taught in Wake County, and we lived across the street from the elementary school where we went to school, and we had our instructions when we got home before she did, and our instructions were to go home, to lock the doors, not let anybody in. When she got there, we ate dinner and we washed the dishes, and then we gathered around the dining room table and did our homework.
And were you one of the older children?
I was the oldest.
You were the oldest?
I'm the oldest of six children.
So did you have special obligations as the oldest child when your mother was at work?
Well, yes, I was to see to it that everybody did what they were supposed to do. I was to see to it that nobody even tried to go outside to let in any neighborhood children in. And we all of us learned to read when we were very young, and we would until she got home, we would read just talk about what had happened in school to each one of us that day. Until she got home. When she got home, she cooked dinner, and we ate dinner, and then we gathered around the table and did our homework.
What about the children who weren't old enough yet to go to school?
My brother and I were the babysitters. We were the two oldest, and we were sort of in charge, you know, of the youngest ones.
Mm-hmm. And you say that you all learned how to read at very young ages.
Yeah.
Did your mother teach you
how
to read?
Yes, indeed, she did. She taught us how to read. And we learned to read by reading stories of the Bible.
Did you have any stories that were your favorites when you were a little girl?
Well, my favorite was the story of Ruth. It still is.
Yes.
Yeah. So, she's a liberated woman. Yes, we our family was a religious family. We went to church. We went to Sunday school. We went to BYPU. We were Baptist Young People's Union. We went to Wednesday night prayer meeting, and we went to church. We went to Sunday school. We went to day church. We went to BYPU, which was in the afternoon, and we went to night church. My mother sang in the choir, and we went to everything that the church had. Well, when I was growing up, we not only did we go to school, but my mother, we always knew that we were going to be somebody. We grew up knowing that, you know. And she sent me to a music teacher, and I learned to play the piano when I was before I was 12, and I played for the Sunday school. And as I grew older, I learned to play the organ, pipe organ. And when I was in my teens, I was assistant organist for the church. So we were, whatever went on in church, we were there.
Were there social events at church as well as more, I guess mm-hmm. everything that goes on in the church is religious and spiritual, but mm-hmm. do you remember picnics?
Yes. In fact, on Tuesday we went, we had what was called a WIC circle. What did WIC mean? It was a club. It was a women's club. But what they did was they had activities for children, and that was every Tuesday. And after we went, came home from school, and Mama came home. We had dinner on Tuesdays. She would take us to church to that WIC meeting. And that was a social activity. We went to Sunday school. We took part in Christmas plays, Thanksgiving plays, Easter plays, things like that. And everything that went on in the church, and the church was, it is, as well as you say, religious, was a really a social institution. Mm-hmm. Where you learned how to to know other people. In fact, I have friends. The first name, young lady on that list I gave you, she and I grew up in the same church in Raleigh, Rosalia Durant. Mm-hmm.
Ms. Durant.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. We grew up together in the church.
And you're still friends today.
And we're still friends today. In fact, we're just like sisters. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. We talk to each other just about every day.
Mm-hmm. And you were friends as little girls.
As little girls. Mm-hmm.
Do you remember any conflicts or disagreements coming up in the church and how people might have settled those if they did arise?
Well, if so, our mother didn't let us know about them. I'm sure she did, but I do remember one thing, and that had to do with our first instruction in the sex education at home. in the Baptist Church, I don't know whether it's still done now or not, but I know when I was growing up, if a young woman got pregnant and had a baby out of wedlock, she was put out of the church. Mm-hmm. And I remember one such instance that happened. And I remember when she came back to the church, she had to come before the church and apologize and say how sorry she was and everything, and the church had to vote on getting her back in. And that was the first time that our mother set the three girls down and talked to them about the facts of life.
Mm-hmm. And how
old were you then? I was less than 12, I know. Mm-hmm. I'm pretty sure I was less than 12. And there were three of us. See, I was the oldest, and the second oldest was a boy. Third was girl. Fourth boy. Fifth girl. six boy. Mm-hmm. And of that, of the six, there are three of us who are living now. My sister and I have one sister and one brother, myself.
And so your mother didn't speak with the boys about this incident?
No, my father did.
I see.
Mm-hmm. Now when he came, you see, he was a good parent. And although he was very seldom at home, when he came home, he was dad. And I remember, overhearing Mama tell him that the children were getting to the point now where they needed to have some serious talk about the facts of life. And he instructed the boys, and Mama instructed the girls.
And do you remember the young woman who came back to the church and asked for forgiveness? Do you remember anyone, was the young man treated the same way?
No, nobody ever knew who he was. Well, I guess some of the adults did, but I don't believe he was a member of the church. But I never heard of any young man being put out for fathering a child, because I think most of the time people didn't know who the child was, who the father was.
Mm-hmm. So you said that when your father came back to the house between jobs or came back to see you, he was dead in the house.
Yes, he was dead.
Uh-huh. What was it like when you knew that your father was coming home?
Mm-hmm. Well, Dad was not as strict a disciplinarian as Mama. And we were always glad to see him when he came home, because we knew that we weren't gonna get a whipping. We thought, because Mama did not spare the rod. She did not spare the rod at all. And I remember, in growing up, the only time that I got a whipping from my father was when I slapped my sister for something that she did, and I slapped her, and he saw me do that, and he took me across his lap and spanked me. But that was the only time that he ever punished me, and I don't think he ever punished any of the rest of us.
Did your parents disagree about that, about discipline?
No, no. You see, Dad was not there very much, and so Mama was really the disciplinarian. So anything that required discipline happened when he wasn't there most of the time. And you see that spanking that I got, he spanked me because he saw me when I slapped my sister. He saw it.
How old would you have been then?
Oh, let's see. I guess I was about 10. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Can I ask you a little bit more about school now?
School, sure.
School. Did your mother teach in the elementary school?
Yes, she taught in the elementary school in the county. And we lived in the city. And we lived right across the street from the elementary school that we went to.
So you didn't go to the school where your mother was teaching?
No.
Do you remember the name of the school that you went to?
Uh-huh. Crosby Garfield School in Raleigh. Mm-hmm. And that school now is no longer a school. It's a community center of some kind. It's one of the schools that was closed, you know, during the desegregation times when lots of black schools were closed, but that was one of them. But it's a community center now. Now, that was the first school we went to. We moved from the house where we were living across the street from the school to another location, which was not in that school district. And we were assigned to another school. The name of that school was Lucille Hunter School. It was a new school, and we were the first, among the first students to attend that school. And I remember that I was in sixth grade then, and I was in the first sixth grade class of Lucille Hunter School. And from there, I went to high school, to Washington High School. And Washington High School was a long way from where we lived. And it was a long, long walk every day, but I wasn't the only one walking it. Everybody in the neighborhood was walking to Washington High School, everybody who went to high school. Was a walk to Washington High School.
Did you have friends who you walked with?
Yes, yes. Mm-hmm.
How long would it take you to walk to school?
Well, let's see, school opened at 9 o'clock. And I believe we left home probably around 7:30, I guess. Mm-hmm. I went up 7:38 because we ate breakfast. Mama always gave us breakfast before she went to work. Mm-hmm. And see, she drove she carpooled, you know, with some other ladies who taught out in the county, the same place she did. And but we always had breakfast before we left.
Did you have fun with the other children on the way from school?
Yes, we did. We had a good time. We would skip, you know, and mm-hmm. we would have a good time. And there was a certain place that we met at the end of the day, and we came back home together. And some of those people, you know, are people who are, some of them are no longer living, but there are a few of them who still live in Raleigh. And on the rare times when I go to Raleigh, I call up. We get together.
Mm-hmm. What do you remember about your teachers?
My teachers? I always loved school. Mm-hmm. You see, my mama was a teacher, and she taught us at home. So going to school was not our first experience with teaching, you see. Mm-hmm. And I just loved I love school, and I love my teachers. Now, at Crosby Garfield School, which was the first school that I went to, and I entered that school in third grade. I didn't go to first and second grade. When I went to school, I knew how to read. So, my third grade teacher was Miss Dorothy Lane. And Miss Dorothy Lane is living now. She has some relatives that live around the corner. And she's living now, so she's in her 90s now. She's probably almost 100. And she is the only elementary school teacher that I had that I think is still living. Now, my fourth grade teacher was Mrs. Daisy Evans. And I know Miss Evans is not living, but she was my fifth grade teacher. And my sixth grade teacher was, I never will forget her. Her name was Miss Minnie Bell Clark. And she was, Miss Dorothy Lane was not married, but she never did get married. Miss Lane, Daisy Evans was married. She had one son, I remember. But Miss Clark was single. And during that year that she was my teacher, she became engaged. And she told us, about her fiance, and told us that she was going to get married. And I never will forget that. We made up a song about her, and her husband to be was named. And my memory just goes, but I remember this. I don't know why on earth I still remember that man's name was Adolphus Henry Ross.
Adolphus Henry Ross.
Adolphus Henry Ross, and we made up that song. With his name in it. We say Adolphus Henry Ross and Minnie Bell Clark planned to marry. And the song was around that, you know, and when she would come in the morning, we'd start singing Adolphus Henry Ross and Minnie Bell Clark. But when she married, she left Raleigh, so I never saw her again, but I never forgot her. She was a good teacher. Mm-hmm. And in high school, the teachers that I remember, I have a picture of one. I'll show it to you.
I'll remember to ask you.
Mm-hmm, yeah. She was, her name was Mrs. Susie Vic Perry, and she was
Mrs. Perry.
Mrs. Perry, uh-huh, and she just died last year. She was my chemistry teacher. And she taught me a lot of things besides chemistry. She taught me to not let people pick on me. And she taught me to speak up, you know, for what I believed and what I knew. She taught me she told me that I was going to see, and I was a pretty good student. I graduated from high school as valedictorian and also college as valedictorian. But she told me that I was going to join her sorority. Well, I didn't know anything about a sorority. I said, "What is a sorority?" And she told me. And she told me about her her sorority, which is Alpha Kappa Alpha sorority, and that's this sorority that I joined. But when I was in college, I went to Shaw University.
Shaw University
in Raleigh, but we didn't have sororities at Shaw when I was a student there, and they didn't. They had fraternities, but didn't have sororities. And sororities didn't come on campus until I was a senior. And my sorority didn't come on campus then. And the other sororities, I was rushed by the other two sororities. And I told Miss Perry that these other sororities wanted me to come to their rush party. She said, "No, you don't. You are going to join Alpha Kappa Alpha." I said, "Well, it's Alpha Kappa Alpha. It's not on the campus." "It will be. And you just wait. So you just wait. And if it doesn't come on campus before you graduate, well, you know, there's that we have in our sorority, we have alumni chapters. And I will see to it that you join the Raleigh alumni chapter." And she did. And I joined the Raleigh alumni chapter. Although I had finished college and had gone to teach for my first job. And I came back to Raleigh when she told me, they had voted to take me in, and there were two or three other young women they were going to take in. And when I came home for Thanksgiving, that was the time that they had there. Mm-hmm. But going back to high school, I didn't finish high school. To tell you, Miss Perry was my favorite teacher in high school, and Miss Hicks. She was my Latin teacher in high school, and I liked her too. But Mr. Johnson was my English teacher, and he was a person who sort of kept me going on what I had already learned at home, and that was reading, just reading widely. And he had us learn poetry, and he would assign us the poems to read. And well, of course, when we came home, you know, we always had to let Mama know what our homework was. And if we had a poem to read, she would see to it that we would learn it sometimes that same night.
What kinds of books and poems did your teachers assign you to read?
Well, I'm trying to think of one that came to my head, my mind, and went right. It'll come back to me. Mm-hmm. I know when I was a senior, we had the Shakespearean plays. We had to learn passages from Shakespeare. Now, if you didn't ask me that, I could just rattle it off.
Of course.
I could just rattle it off.
Do you ever remember reading any African American poets?
We read African American. We had African American history when I was in sixth grade, mm-hmm. And we didn't read poetry, but we studied history, and we learned about Booker T. Washington and Marian Anderson, Roland Hayes. I never will forget. I lost that book, and I always intended to keep it. And when we moved, it was lost. But there was a textbook that we used in sixth grade about a Negro history textbook, starting with slavery and coming on up through this, whatever was happening at that particular time.
And did the students have to pay for these books?
We rented. We rented books, but I don't know how I came to be in possession of that book. But we rented our books. The first of the year, you paid your rental fee, And you went to the book room, and you had your little slip, and you gave the slip to the person who was in charge, and whoever was in charge would give you the books that were on that slip. Mm-hmm. But I don't remember that we rented that book. Maybe we bought it, because I know that we had it at home, and we lost it somehow.
Mm-hmm. So you stayed in touch with some of your high school teachers, like Miss Perry, for a very long time.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Uh-huh. Yes, as I told you, she just died a couple of years ago.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I have a picture of her in there that was taken when the two of us received awards from the sorority at one of the national conventions. Both of us received an award at the same time. And oh, I was just so pleased to go up on the stage with her, and she received a plaque and I received a plaque. And the picture I have shows the two of us both with our plaques, and the national president of the sorority was standing beside us. So I'll show it to you before you leave.
I'd like to see that flag up. Mm-hmm. I'd like to come back a little bit before we move forward to talk a little bit more about your family.
Mm-hmm.
And your mother was a teacher. Mm-hmm. Where was your mother educated?
Well, during the times that Mama was a teacher, you didn't have to go to college, be a college graduate to be a teacher. You can go. You would go to school in the summertime. And sometimes there were at Shaw, they had on Saturday, they had Saturday classes that people who were teaching who wanted to be certified and to keep their certificates up. And that's how she got her certificate. She never went to college. She wanted to go to Fisk. And she did go to Fisk for one semester. But she couldn't stay. Her folks couldn't. I don't know how she got there. But she did go to Fisk one semester. And she wanted me to go to Fisk, but the family didn't have enough money to send me away to school, and that's why I went to school at home, at Shaw. Mm-hmm.
And what did your, I guess a better way to ask you would be, what you remember about your grandparents,
mm-hmm.
your mother's parents, or your father's, or both?
Well, I never knew, none of us ever knew my father's parents, except what he told us about him. We had a picture of my grandfather that was lost someplace. My father came from Alabama, and he met my mother in Farmville, North Carolina, where she was teaching when he was on one of his jobs. And so she never went to Alabama. We never went to Alabama. But a brother of his came to North Carolina while after we moved to Raleigh, and we met him. He lived in Durham. But we saw him every now and then. You know, he would come over to see us. And we met, one of his sisters came to see us one time from Alabama. But we never met his parents. Now, we knew my mother's mother. In fact, my mother's mother lived till she was nearly 100, and she was living with us in Raleigh when she died.
Uh-huh. So you grew up with your grandmother in the house?
Well,
time?
She wasn't there all that long.
Uh-huh.
No. In fact, when she came to live with us, she was, really in her latter years, and she wasn't even well. But we used to go to, she lived in Weldon, and in the summertime, we used to go down there to visit her. But we would just go, we had a little old Essex, and Mama would drive us to Weldon, and we'd stay 2 or 3 days and come back. Mm-hmm. But we weren't around her enough for her to have any lasting impact on our lives. But the fact that Mama was a religious person, and she grew up in the church, and of course that was her mother's teachings. Mm-hmm.
Did when you did go visit your grandmother in the summertime,
mm-hmm.
I guess in the summertime, you didn't say.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yes, in the summertime.
Did she ever tell you stories about her childhood or anything like that?
No. What I remember about those summers is the neighbors' children that we met, and we would go fishing, and. We would always, if we were there over a weekend, we always went to Sunday school and church. And we would play games, we would play Jack Rocks and things like that, and the children's games, you know, jumping over the somebody would be moving the rope, and you would jump rope, you know, that. So those are the kinds of things I remember doing when we went to see grandmother. I don't remember. In fact, I just don't ever remember her sitting down and talking to her. Mm-hmm.
What did your parents do? Was your father's father a plasterer also? Was it something else?
I don't know. See, never met him. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Never met him. Now, his brother, who came to Durham, was a plasterer. And now, whether they got that from their father, I don't know. I never knew that.
How did your parents teach you to address adults when you were a child?
Miss, Mrs., yes ma'am, no ma'am, Reverend, Doctor.
Mm-hmm. And were you to treat white adults and black adults in the same way?
Well, we never came in contact with whites, with white adults. I guess the only time you'd ever come in contact with a white adult was if you happened to go into a store to buy something. But then, you know, there was never any conversation. You just say, I what you want, and you tell them what you want, and you pay them, and that was it. I never came in contact with whites, really, until I went to graduate school.
Mm-hmm. What about white children when you were a child?
Well, you see, we grew up in a segregated society, completely segregated society. And we lived in a segregated community. There were no blacks, no whites anywhere in the community where we lived in Raleigh. Now, if you'd go downtown and go into Woolworths, Cress's, Sears Roebuck and something to buy something, you know, you would see whites there. But as far as having any kind of social interaction or school interaction with whites, there was none.
Do you remember seeing the signs,
Yes. You couldn't possibly miss them. Mm-hmm. You couldn't possibly miss them. The signs that say, water signs. I remember the ones I remember most are the ones that were downtown near the post office, and they had a water fountain. They had two water fountains, and one was for white and one was black. And I remember asking Mama why that was, and she said, "Well, that's the way it is." I said, that's the way. And if you want water when you're downtown, you go to the one that says they didn't say black, they said colors. We were colored then. And of course, there's no such thing as going to restrooms in the stores downtown. No such thing. I remember when we would go to the Weldon in our Essex in the summertime. You know, if we needed to relieve ourselves, Mama would drive off on a dirt road. You know, and you would go find a place to urinate in the bushes somewhere. I don't think that did I ever? No, it was when I went to the University of Michigan, when I realized I didn't have to pay any attention to them. In fact, there were no signs for you to pay up at Michigan for us to pay you to have to observe. But in growing up, I grew up with everything you ever heard about segregation. It was segregated everything.
Since you were the oldest, mm-hmm. did you have to explain to the younger ones as your mother explained to you?
No, she explained it to all of us. Certain things that, see, we always were at home at night. We were around after dinner around the table, and we studied our lessons, and we learned what she had to teach us, what she wanted to talk about that particular day. And if that subject ever came up, for instance, if we had gone to a town and had to use a colored water fountain, you know, and if that happened to come up around the table, she would explain to everybody, you know, how that was, that blacks and whites were separate and they had separate facilities. And she would warn us not to to do anything that would get us into any kind of trouble. He said, because I remember my brother asked one time, what would happen to him if he went to the white fountain? And she said, well, he said, even though you're a little boy, you might be arrested, and I might have to come to jail and get you out. So that was enough to scare to scare him and the rest of us not to. In fact, something happened to me then during those days that I still remember. I do not use public facilities. I do not use a public water fountain. I do not use a public toilet. I just don't.
Anywhere or only in the South?
Not anywhere. Not anywhere. If I'm in New York, I'll come back to my hotel or wherever I'm staying. If I'm at a convention, there's just something. And I know it came out of the experiences in my childhood, the white and black. I just don't like it. I don't go to it. Now that's not to say that I have never been to, because you know there are sometimes that you know you're in a situation where you better go or you better go. But there's been my it's my habit not to if I don't have to.
That's interesting. I'd like to ask you about your first job now, because you went to Shaw University. Uh-huh. And then you came, did you immediately come to Charlotte?
No, I didn't. I know this was my third job. One thing that my mother taught us by her example and also by precept was to first always stick together, help each other, and when you are of age, register and vote. Because she always did, and we would ask her why she was voting, and she would, you know, tell us why. That's the way you had you could help elect the people who were going to run the city. And she never, never missed voting. And in Raleigh, you could vote. Black people could vote in Raleigh. And she, the voting place was the school across the street where we, mm-hmm. where we at the school, and she always voted. Well, when I graduated from Shaw in 1936, my first job was up in the mountains, up in Rutherford County, in Rutherford County. And I was old enough to vote and had registered in Raleigh, but had not voted. So when I went up there, it was the year that I went up there, was the year that Franklin Roosevelt was running for his second term. And I was looking forward to voting for Franklin Roosevelt, because I got through college on the WPA and some of the programs that he initiated, and with Franklin Roosevelt he was my idol, and I was going to vote for Franklin Roosevelt. Well, when I talked about voting, the teachers in the school where I was said, "What do you mean voting?" I said, "Well, I mean voting. I'm going to cast my vote for Franklin Roosevelt." And they said, "Not up here, you are." I said, "What?" They said, "No, black people can't vote up here." Well, I just couldn't believe it. I couldn't believe it. But and I didn't believe it. So I went down to the place where you register, and showed up, said I wanted to register. They asked me what I wanted. I want to register to vote. And I told them I was already registered in Raleigh. And so they told me I couldn't register up there. Well, why? Well, we don't allow colored folks to vote up here. Why? We just don't. And I did not vote. And that hurt me so. And I didn't go back up there to work. I told Mama that I wanted to come closer to home to work. So I got in touch with Shaw and told him I wanted to get a job near home. And they found me a job at Wake Forest, which was just 16 miles from home. And my second job was at Wake Forest. And I have voted ever since. I never missed voting, never. I taught in Wake Forest for 6 years. My first job up in Rutherford County, my principal was a Dr. Johnson. And he hated so much for me to leave, but I did. But he left too that day. He got a job as principal in Burlington. And I went to Wake Forest. I worked at Wake Forest. I taught English. I taught English. I taught French. I was a part-time librarian, a part-time music teacher. That was just the way it was. You know, that's all the facilities that you had. You had every. There was not a single teacher on a faculty who didn't have multiple duties. Well, Dr. Johnson got in touch with me, and I think I had been working in Wake Forest for five years. And he wanted me to come to Burlington. And I was interested in going to Burlington because Burlington paid a supplement and Wake Forest didn't. So I told him, yes, I would come. So, but when I went to my principal to tell him that I was resigning and I was going to teach in Burlington, he would not sign the papers to release me. And I could not go to Burlington.
Oh. Why was that, Dr. Randolph?
Well, you see, it's interesting. You have to understand how this segregated system was how it operated. The teachers never went to Wake Forest was in the county, and the county seat was Raleigh. So when the principal had reports and things to give to the central office, he had to come to Raleigh to bring them. But teachers never went to the central office. We didn't know anything about the central office. We knew there was the superintendent of schools. But we never saw him. He never came to Wake Forest. So all the principal had to do was just not to turn the papers in, you see, and put me on his roster, you know, as continuing since I'd already been there 5 years. Well, I taught there one more year, but principal Dr. Johnson came to see me. At Christmas holidays, I think, so. And see, because I commuted. I was in Wake Forest during the week, and I went home to Raleigh on the weekend. And he told me, he said, you know, he said, I still want you to come work with me, and I'll tell you how to do it. He said, now, you wait until school closes. And when you come home, he said, you sending your resignation. So, and he said there's nothing that the principal can do about it. He said, you can resign. And he said, you have the time to resign, you see, because he said, just don't wait a month. He said, if you wait a month, so you can't get released from your contract, but you can resign. He said, just do it the week after you get home, sending your resignation. And that's what I did. So that's how I got to Burlington. That was my second job.
Excuse me, Dr. Randolph, mm-hmm. You said that they paid a supplement in Burlington.
Mm-hmm.
Why was that?
Well, just like the reason they pay a supplement here, and they pay supplements just about everywhere now in all large cities. Where they pay a supplement because they want more for that in their schools than the state basic funding. Allowed, so the supplements come out of local taxes, uh-huh. And see, we have the largest supplement in the state, but it comes out of local taxes. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You see, all schools in the state are funded by the state, but cities and counties and small towns who have whose people want more than that, and who don't mind paying the taxes, the extra taxes. Well, they have the supplements. Well, Burlington has a supplement, and that's the reason there were two reasons. I wanted to leave Wake Forest because I was mad because the principal wouldn't let me go the last time, and then I wanted to make some more money, so I went to Burlington. Now that was in the 1940s, during World War II. And when I got to Burlington, my principal had been drafted. No, he was not there when I got there. So, I liked the school. And in fact, the place that I got a room to stay was right across the street from the school. And I was a teacher. I taught English, and I taught French, and I was a librarian. And I did the same things I was doing in Wake Forest and played for the Glee Club. So I was the kind of person who would, when I see something that needs to be done, I'll do it. So if I saw some paper out on the sidewalk and there weren't any children around, it was after school, I'd go pick it up myself. And I mentored a lot of kids, the kids I taught. And so there was a fellow from Charlotte who was on that faculty. His name was Audrey Heffington. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And bless his heart, he's still here, but he's very, very ill. I haven't seen him in years. But he came to me, he said, you ought to be teaching in Charlotte. I said, why? So he said, well, you're a good teacher. And he said, you just need to be there. And so, Charlotte pays a larger supplement than Burlington. He said, you ought to apply to teach in Charlotte. I said, you can't get jobs in big cities like that unless you know somebody.